The internet assumed nothing, and it won because it had the basic, robust, open building blocks upon which all the innovation actually occurred. The same thing has happened with Bitcoin over the last 15 years, and is now starting to happen with Nostr. And it's right on time, because the gateways to the internet have centralized to such a degree that the very topography of the web is changing. Access to this open bazaar is being threatened because the applications who were once gateways have started to become gatekeepers. To fix this, and to fundamentally fix the internet, we need to upgrade the internet stack and establish a new suite of superior products, services, and applications that compete on value, not on gatekeeper economics. The best in Bitcoin made audible. I am Guy Swan, and this is Bitcoin Audible. What is up, guys? Welcome back to Bitcoin Audible. I am Guy Swan, the guy who has read more about Bitcoin than anybody else you know. We've got a great show today. This is actually something that dropped on highlighter.com, which is just Nostr, so you can also find it on Nostr. But I will have the link to the ID and the highlighter.com link in the show notes for everybody who has Nostr. And if you do not have a Nostr ID, you're really missing out, because highlighter.com has been a fantastic tool that continues to improve. And it was just really cool to go over and read this article, be able to zap it immediately. I was like logged in automatically, you know, I don't have to create an ID. And it's so funny that this is exactly what this article is about today. This article is from Alex Fetsky, who we've had on the show numerous times. He's also been on AI Unchained. He's been building so many different products. He does the Amber app in Australia. And, well, actually, in a lot of different countries, I think you can use the Amber app in the US. He also brought the team together that created the first, like, real Bitcoiner LLM, the 7 billion parameter Spirit of Satoshi model, which is open source and available. And that was an enormous task. And we read their breakdown of everything they learned about it on AI Unchained, by the way. So that's actually something that I will link in the show notes if you haven't heard that episode, or actually I think it's two episodes, because it's a fantastic breakdown in understanding what goes into a large language model and the incredible task of trying to pull all the information together, formatting it, and all the pieces of the puzzle, because it's been kind of obscured, you know, what really goes into these things, what are the myths about LLMs, all that good stuff. And they've been building really amazing stuff over there. And this article is actually about something that they discovered during the process of building that large language model and trying to sort through and find separate the wheat from the chaff, so to speak, in the Bitcoiner data. How do you filter the web according to a set of values and according to quality? And they discovered something really, really fascinating and an incredible potential for something like the Nostr protocol. So I will not lead too much, and I will let him get into it. Really quick, I want to thank our amazing sponsors, CoinKite, the makers of the Cold Card hardware wallet, which you can get a discount on if you want to hold your keys. You need to hold your keys, so you can get a discount with my code in the show notes. And then Swan Bitcoin, with a full suite of Bitcoin services so you can get on a Bitcoin standard. And right now, the next $10,000 you buy is fee-free. No fees whatsoever. So check them out. With that, let's get into the article, and it's titled Reviewing Reviews by Alex Fetsky. There are 1 billion reviews on TripAdvisor for venues, merchants, and vendors around the world. Trustpilot has almost 200 million reviews of online websites, products, and services. Uber and Airbnb are literally booking platforms that run on reviews. Amazon has a few billion product reviews, and Google well into the billions. All this despite the fact that most reviews are fake, irrelevant, and easily gamed. I believe the Noster social graph can fix this. In this essay, I explore how. How Noster fixes reviews, ratings, and recommendations. The team and I have been working on something. We stumbled on it by accident when we set out to build a digital directory for Bitcoin circular economies that our AI models could reference. It's funny how things work sometimes. You're digging for one thing, and on the way, you find something unexpected and far more significant. I believe that what we discovered opens the door to one of the most powerful and under-discussed use cases for Noster. This essay and the next few will explore what we're doing in greater detail. I can't wait to welcome you to Satlantis. Reviewing reviews. Reviews and recommendations are fundamentally broken, despite being the key driver for buying behavior and decisions worldwide, particularly online. 1. 89% of users read online reviews before buying the product. 2. 93% of users have made buying decisions based on an online review. 3. Only 9% of consumers would consider engaging with a business that had a 1 or 2 star average rating. They've been infected with the same disease that digital advertising has. They are mostly fake, easily gamed, censorable, and generally irrelevant to the person reading them. This needs to change, and for the first time in the history of the web, there's a way to fix this. I'm going to explain how the platform we are building, Satlantis, will leverage this new internet stack to do it. But before I do that, I'd like to walk you through the problem in a little more detail. An ocean of reviews. There are 1 billion reviews on TripAdvisor for venues, merchants, and vendors around the world. Trustpilot has almost 200 million reviews of online websites, products, and services. Glassdoor says that they have 2,334,000 unique reviews of businesses by employees. Uber and Airbnb are literally booking platforms that run on reviews. Amazon has a few billion product reviews, unable to find a total number, and Google, who is by far the largest online repository of online business reviews in the world, has well into the billions. In fact, think about what the entire influencer marketing industry is itself. Literally a market for reviews and recommendations. This is a huge part of the internet, whose existence is driven by the psychological human need for external validation. And it's never going to change. Anyone who has worked in sales and marketing understands this. This is why, in the absence of a better alternative, more people are flocking to these broken review platforms to try and either find or create signal in the noise. Note: consumer use of Google to evaluate local businesses leapt from 63% in 2020 to 81% in 2021. Pointless junk everywhere. Despite the clear need for and growing popularity of reviews, the frameworks they operate on are fundamentally broken. This results in a few big problems. 1. Irrelevance. The reviews we read are mostly irrelevant. What does a 45-year-old soccer mom's opinion about a restaurant have to do with me and my preferences? 2. Fake. Reviews are now mostly fake. In a recent study, 50% of consumers said they were confident they've seen a fake review on Google. Another study that looked at 33.5 million reviews for best-selling products on Amazon found that almost 43% were fake. 3. Easily gamed. Beyond just fake reviews is the ability to game the system. There is an entire cottage industry of, quote, reputation agencies whose entire business model is to create the illusion of quality where there is none. 4. Censorable. Review platforms are centralized services whose incentives are often in conflict with the truth. It's not an easy problem to solve, because sometimes the public is your client, but sometimes so too is the business. Google and TripAdvisor are notorious for the deletion of reviews. In fact, there are now even services to help businesses, quote, remove bad reviews. See this provider in Germany who charges $29 a month for the service. So, how to fix all of this? Well, it's no small task, but the seeds of the solution have been sown. Let's begin by looking at what the internet is and why it has become the basic substrate for cyberspace. The internet stack. The internet is a thing of beauty. It connected humanity like no other technology or phenomenon before it. The possibilities it opened up are almost endless, despite being handicapped since inception, because it emerged before we had true digital money and identity. Right now, the internet stack looks something like this. The link layer is responsible for the physical and logical link between devices. Think Ethernet, Wi-Fi, and PPP. The IP layer routes packets across network boundaries, making it possible for data to reach its destination regardless of the path it takes. The transport and TCP layer is responsible for delivering data between devices over the network. The application layer, think HTTP, FTP, SMTP, is where end-user protocols operate. Together, they form the foundation upon which the applications, platforms, and sites, which make up the, quote, internet, are built. This includes all of the sites and platforms we use on a daily basis, and that much of the modern world depends on. Notice how the first four layers, which make everything possible, are a series of standards or protocols. Online products, services, and applications might have their own internal standards, but they all leverage the protocols which made up the core internet stack. Why was the internet successful? Despite the handicap I mentioned earlier, the internet has still been wildly successful. Why? Precisely because it was a stack of protocols, and not a company, a platform, or a service. What made it special is that nobody, quote, owned it. AOL failed because it was a complex, managed corporate information superhighway with all the bells and whistles. They learned the hard way that no amount of market data or corporate experience and foresight can predict what a new communication modality would become. Just as free markets always trump centrally governed ones, open networks are exactly where all the innovation goes. The internet assumed nothing, and it won because it had the basic, robust, open building blocks upon which all the innovation actually occurred. The same thing has happened with Bitcoin over the last 15 years and is now starting to happen with Nostr. And it's right on time, because the gateways to the internet have centralized to such a degree that the very topography of the web is changing. Access to this open bazaar is being threatened because the applications who were once gateways have started to become gatekeepers. To fix this, and to fundamentally fix the internet, we need to upgrade the internet stack and establish a new suite of superior products, services, and applications that compete on value, not on gatekeeper economics. The upgraded internet stack. The upgraded internet stack retains everything that was good about the existing internet and solves for the handicaps by incorporating two new protocols. 1. Global Protocol for Money, Bitcoin. Until Bitcoin, money on the internet has been more of an application. In fact, because of the nature of fiat, all you have is third parties whom you authorize to convey information about intrinsically offline money. This is why companies like PayPal and Stripe have been so successful. Still, despite their success, value transmission has been muffled because of the differential in settlement speed, the credit nature of fiat, and political constraints of the monetary issuer. Now, for the first time, money and value can travel as fast as information, and by embedding it into the core internet stack, we can unlock a truly open, Global Grand Bazaar. 2. Global Protocol for Identity and Social, NOSTER. Digital identity has also remained elusive. Similar to money on the internet, identity has thus far existed as an application. It's not yours, but a service you use. A database entry on Facebook's servers, or Google's or Amazon's servers, which you probably use to log into some app today. This works, and it's fine, until it doesn't work, and it's no longer fine. Which is where we find ourselves today. We've realized that we don't actually own our accounts. We can be deplatformed at any time. Our entire social graph can vanish, and we certainly cannot bring it with us from one walled garden to another. NOSTER changes all that by pushing identity from the application layer down into the protocol layer. In fact, it goes a step further by also making the social graph itself portable. This opens up a whole new design space for future applications. Together, these new innovations create an upgraded internet stack that looks more like this. 1. Link layer, the physical. 2. Internet layer, IP. 3. Transmission layer, TCP/IP. 4. Process and resource layer, HTTP. 5. Monetary layer, BTC. 6. Identity layer, NOSTER. 7. Clients, apps, platforms, sites. The opportunity. New clients and apps. This is where it gets interesting, and is precisely where the next big opportunities exist. The upgraded internet stack makes it possible for a whole new suite of applications to leverage a range of primitives that previously did not exist, or were only possible inside of a walled garden. Think of it this way. If you upgrade the building materials, the kinds of structures you can build are also upgraded. The existing internet stack is like wood. It can be used to build beautiful things, but they can only be structurally sound to a certain size. The new internet stack is like steel. We can now build superstructures that were just not possible before. But note that this is not a fat protocol thesis. Steel, bricks, glass, wood, stone, these are all building blocks and commodities. The real value is in the builders, the architect, the engineers, and the designers. It's what they do with the building blocks that matter. And that is precisely where the economic and business value will accrue. In the same way, value will not accrue to the protocol because it's not supposed to. Protocols are more of a commodity. The money is and should be made by those who leverage the protocols for end-user products, apps, and services. Bitcoin as a protocol is a unique exception because it's money and actually measures all the value in the world. A whole new world of applications awaits that leverage the power of the internet, the portability of a social graph, webs of trust and interest, and direct, global, permissionless monetization. These applications will be able to do things the old Internet 2.0 applications could never do. This is where the next breakthrough, 0-to-1 moments, will happen. The next major unicorns will leverage this stack. Where does AI fit in? AI enhances applications. Simple. It doesn't even get its own spot in the stack. Smart business will embrace and embed machine learning and AI where necessary, and they will unlock incredible amounts of value. But they will use it as any other building block, not a core focus. This is our new mantra. I am so bullish on the opportunity to fix this problem that I've actually decided to shift the core focus of our entire business in this direction. AI will remain a central part of what we are doing, but we are no longer purely an AI company. It is just another part of our DNA, like the internet, Bitcoin, and NOSTER are. How this solves reviews. Okay, Svetsky, this is cool and all, and I know about the internet, but what the hell does this have to do with fixing online reviews? Simple. The addition of identity and subsequently a social graph into the protocol layers of the internet changes the topography of the web. new applications can leverage an open protocol to make the user experience more relevant by using their web of trust and interest graph. Think about it this way. I want to go to Dubai and pick a restaurant to eat at. When I look at the reviews, I should see those from my direct or indirect social circle first. In fact, the closer the review is to me, both in terms of social graph and relevance and interest graph, then the more their rating should influence the overall rating of the venue that I see. In other words, scores, ratings, and reviews can and should be dynamic across the entire web. Your definition of a 5-star venue is different to mine. And in fact, if you and I share very little in common and have different values or beliefs, your 5-star rating may just be my 1-star rating. This topography solves both for relevance and for the bot farms skewing overall scores. Do not underestimate the gravity of this. For the first time ever, reviews, ratings, and recommendations can be influenced by my social graph, thereby making them not only more real, but more relevant and useful. In fact, there doesn't even need to be a single canonical presentation. What you see has the potential to be dynamic based on what you're interested in that moment. This has implications beyond just reviews, but also the nature of advertising, which I will write about in a subsequent essay, as it's another problem I would like to solve with Satlantis. Beyond just the social graph, reviews can be further validated and strengthened with the integration of a monetary protocol. Instead of just liking a review, you can tip or zap it. A review your friend has, quote, zapped should probably have more influence on the venue rating that you see than some random rating or review done by someone not connected to you. This exhibits real economic preference and cuts through spam and fake reviews. Together, the social graph and incentives transform the very nature of reviews, and therefore the way the internet will work. A killer app? Here's a little thought experiment to help you visualize what I'm talking about. Imagine if you could somehow discover what to do in a city, where to stay, places to visit, and which communities to connect with based on travel posts and places you bookmarked on Instagram and X, the WhatsApp and Telegram groups you've joined and engaged with the most, the reviews on TripAdvisor and Google that you got the most value from, the Facebook groups you're not only a part of, but interact with the most, the places you've stayed on Booking.com and have loved, the restaurants and merchants that you and your friends have reviewed, the meetups and events you've attended on Meetup.com and Eventbrite, the travel and nomad accounts you follow across your different social media accounts. This is obviously impossible today, without some mega surveillance corp to track it all. But with Nostr, it's actually possible, for the first time, in a privacy and sovereignty preserving way. Soon, you will be able to log into an app connected to your social graph, then you follow the cities you're interested in, and watch as the things most relevant and important to you magically surface, thanks to your web of trust and activity on the Nostr network. This is precisely what we are building at Satlantis. No more reading through 100 pointless reviews from soccer moms on TripAdvisor or fake reviews on Google Maps. No more joining 10 different WhatsApp, Telegram, or Facebook groups to find a community. No more endless Google searches and scanning through all your bookmarks on Instagram and Twitter to put them all into just another spreadsheet. Just one home for nomading, travel, living, and lifestyle. Satlantis. Travel, living, and lifestyle is a $2 trillion per year industry, with real money being spent every minute of every day of every year. And at the heart of every buying decision lives ratings, reviews, and recommendations. TripAdvisor might be a travel site on the surface, but its core value proposition is the 1 billion ratings. This is their unique selling point and what drives traffic to them. Airbnb and Booking.com help you book a place to stay, but are driven by ratings, both official and community-driven. The same goes for Uber, Amazon, and for that matter, every product, service, or experience out there. They are all driven by reviews and ratings. If we can take this core building block, alongside the fact that nomading, travel, and lifestyle are social experiences that happen in the real world, we can build something novel. People are stuck today trying to do logistics, reviews, comparisons, and bookings on non-social apps, TripAdvisor, Nomadlist, Booking.com, Google, while trying to curate and present the social side on generalist social media, Instagram, X, YouTube. Imagine instead we leverage this new stack to build a location-centric hub, combining the social and community elements of Instagram and Facebook, the travel and reviews element of TripAdvisor, the directory element of Nomadlist, and the events element of Meetup.com. Like a homepage for the city, where you can find people, communities, events, merchants, jobs, stats, meetups, accommodation, useful apps, travel and living guides, and of course, reviews and recommendations. Something like this doesn't exist today. People are craving a way to connect in real life. And while we have multiple social networks for different use cases, aesthetics, Instagram, the public square, X, friends, Facebook, addictive videos, TikTok, what we are lacking is something that ties digital and physical space. The whole point of Satlantis is to build a framework for communities that bridges these, with your social graph at the heart of it. By leveraging the web of trust to fix reviews, we can build something fresh in one of the largest industries on the planet: travel, living, and lifestyle. Web of trust meets web of interest. To do what we want to do, we must piggyback off the success of a protocol. There's no other way to compete with the giant walled gardens. When Google, Netflix, and Facebook were tiny, they outcompeted their predecessors not by building on a closed internet or information superhighway built by Microsoft or the telcos. They bet on the open internet stack, and alongside it, they grew. The same opportunity now exists and is happening with Nostr, and we're not the only ones who've noticed. People are using this portable social graph to reimagine e-commerce, influencer marketing, blogging, the public square, and much more. The future is a whole host of new clients and applications that reimagine how the web is used. We've already seen the first of their kind with the rise of Primal, Highlighter, Domus, and the like. They combine an interoperable social graph with real preferences and value transfers, Zaps. It's still early days, but Nostr's advantage is that every app built on it adds to its overall network effects, much like the early internet. We will make a dent in our corner of the universe, which will be felt by every other corner, together making the entire Nostr network and broader internet stack better, more relevant, and more open. The future of travel and lifestyle, and the reviews which influence it, is dynamic and relevant. Everything will be influenced by what you like, who you follow, what you find meaningful, your economic preferences, and ultimately, by who you are. This dynamic approach to reviews is the foundation of an entirely new kind of travel and lifestyle platform that will obsolete the TripAdvisors of the world. Something like this is only possible when the rules of the game have changed, when there is a new set of ingredients to use. This is what the new internet stack provides, and we intend to take full advantage, while everybody else is sleeping on it. The team and I look forward to welcoming you into Satlantis. This episode is brought to you by Swan Bitcoin, the place to buy your Bitcoin quickly and easily. You can just download the app and get set up in just a couple of minutes and start buying Bitcoin. You can plug it into your IRA, and that also takes only a few minutes to set up, so you can start investing towards your retirement tax-free. You can set up an automatic recurring buy and automatic withdrawal plan, which is a fantastic way to just kind of dollar cost average over time. And you're also going to be working with a platform that not only are you going to get $10,000, your first $10,000 free without any fees whatsoever. You buy $10 worth of Bitcoin, you get $10 worth of Bitcoin. But they're also not going to encourage you to trade. They're not going to have 1,000 other tokens and altcoins and God knows what and trying to convince you to sell this one for this other one because they make fees on that constant exchange. And they're actually going to tell you, you're going to have an enormous amount of resources and you have white glove support to build a long-term position in a new monetizing asset. And they have a ton of resources, including a curated list of things that I think is a great introduction to Bitcoin that I have in the Swan Bitcoin canon. I have put together my own list of things that I think is a really fantastic way to start understanding what Bitcoin is. And Swan provides a full financial suite of services to plug your life into Bitcoin. Check them out at swanbitcoin.com/guy, which of course is right in the show notes. All right. I freaking love this article and I love this idea. It's funny. It's a targeted, this is what I've talked about with Nostr and the separation of the social graph that, and the web of trust. Like we've discussed this on the show quite a bit. In fact, Alex Fetsky and I have talked about it together on the show and together in private multiple times. And this is such a great way to actually apply it that I hadn't, like the idea of reviews and recommendations as like a very concrete and specific thing to go after, I think is such a smart way to go about it and illustrates also the scope of the problem and why this will be so much better. And it also lends itself to understanding why Nostr is actually going to be, why Bitcoin and the fact that the majority of Nostr is Bitcoiners is actually going to be a really, really powerful thing because you've got that atomic network of people who have relevant experiences and reviews, and you have a ton of world travelers, people who can necessarily give reviews and input and, you know, reflect on a bunch of different things from a bunch of different places. In fact, this could actually be a really interesting way to start building out a reliable database of where you can spend Bitcoin and Lightning. Because all of those different centralized services that tried to do this, CoinMap and, you know, this, that, or the other, they don't update. They don't have, inevitably, you know, somebody has removed it, somebody else adds it, and it doesn't get on the map. They don't know about CoinMap. Now it can actually be crowdsourced because the people that, the Bitcoiners and the people who know what it's like to go into the town and, you know, like I spent, there's a number of different places around where the Bitcoin conferences always are, that accept Bitcoin or a place that's just run by a Bitcoiner. And how do I find out those things? I talk to people. I have the network. My social graph is my contact. Like we had a really cool little party and we had the Audionauts meet up in one of the places in Miami that accepts Bitcoin. This is a way to actually bring that into the web experience and leveraging the protocol so that they don't have to do the job of collecting all of it. Or I guess it's not that they don't have the job of collecting it. It's that we don't have the job of needing to know Satlantis specifically in order to start accumulating the knowledge and the relevant information that builds a kind of an ecosystem of links and, you know, places and locations and recommendations from your social graph without them even knowing necessarily that they are participating in this. And it is incredible how potent the idea of rating and review relevance is to it actually being like one of the things that he talks about in the kind of the limitations or the problems of reviews and ratings. What do we got here? It says, okay, so this is how much these are a key driver of decisions and online, you know, the purchasing of certain goods or going to certain places, right? So one, 89% of users read online reviews before buying the product. Two, 93% of users have made buying decisions based on an online review. And three, only 9% of consumers would consider engaging with a business that had a 1 or 2 star average rating. Now, what's really interesting about this is that as I have used the internet, I've noticed this. I've talked about this before on the show, probably a long time ago. It's not always very relevant, but did reviews are a huge problem because you can read them and tell they're fake. And with AI, this whole fake problem is going to get worse and worse. And this is why I think the Web of Trust is such a critical piece of the new puzzle, and that we have to have this social graph system, or we're just going to run into such vast problems of fake everything, the enshittification of the internet. If we do not have a way to measure and weigh that information based on our relevance to our social graph, like one thing that I would still love to see be built, and I, to the point that aside from the fact that I'm working on a couple of projects already and trying to fund a couple of projects, this is one that I've seriously considered tackling because, and he actually talks about it, talks about trying to pull all of my bookmarks from Twitter and Instagram and Noster, like all of these things from like a bunch of different places just to put them in a different spreadsheet. Holy God, I cannot tell you how much frustration and time and like how many different things I have tried to do to make that system work, and I still lose everything. I've used this in Telegram. Like I still have, like the way that I'm managing my links right now, I used Obsidian Notes for a really long time, but something about the interface and the kind of blank links don't really help. It's hard to tell what is what when you're scrolling through. It's like a menu. It's like a food menu that has no pictures. Like you don't read text and get hungry. You look at a picture and you get hungry. You see food. And it's hard to tell what a dish is going to be when you just read a list of ingredients. It's like, is this heavy on the rice? Is this like beef with some rice sprinkled on it? Like, you don't know exactly what it is. You literally just have a list of ingredients. You don't know what it looks like. Picking food on a menu that has no images is actually a more difficult process and leads to different decisions than one that has pictures. And so the only reason I end up using Telegram is for two reasons, actually, is it's really easy. It's really easy to get a link to that Telegram channel, to my individual, my solo Telegram channel that I just have as just a running list of links, to get a link to that from basically anywhere on my phone. Because if I say share something, like if I just hit the normal share button that's in every browser link or website or even, Noster app, like all of the different things, you just kind of have that normal share button. And then the OS brings up a bunch of share options. Well, I just put Telegram towards the front of that list. And when you click on Telegram, it then just gives you a list of rooms, like right there in that same interface, in that grid. And I can just kind of like scroll down and I have my solo channel is just an obvious bright color so that I can see it out of all the things. I scroll, click, done. It's in that thing. And I know that when I go back through, if I'm looking for something, I just do that. I want to be able to do that with Noster or Keet or like Hole Punch and Pairs. I want that sort of a solution to make that database mine, make it so that I can easily export it, do whatever the hell I want with it. But Telegram also does previews so that I can scroll through and kind of, without having to read the URL or the title of something, I can see, oh, that was the one I was looking for. That's the one that's the archive paper or the this, that, or the other. But holy shit, that is a huge problem. Like a huge problem. And Telegram is not even, it's not a great solution to it, but it's a decent, like kind of halfway there. But I still lose so much stuff. I think it was the last episode, actually. I've been talking about I've still been trying to figure out what the hell that privacy protocol, the new privacy protocol in Primitive was. That was a research paper from a couple of years ago. Because I would really like to know what the heck is going on with that. That project, was it all fluff? Can they not get it to work? You know, or are they building something? I just don't know about it. So to have a public protocol of all of the things that I've liked, of all the things that my social graph, just all the articles, just collect all of the articles from the relays and the people that I follow is going to give me, would solve a huge part of my problem and the ability to search that. That's why one of the things that I had thought of more than anything was relevant search. You wouldn't lose stuff, like especially if it's politically incorrect. You know, information about vaccines that aren't just vaccines are perfect and there's no problems and you're an evil person if you even suggest otherwise. COVID vaccine, there's no problem. We tested it all and everything. Don't even look up the original documentation and stuff. If I'm trying to find things that I know is there, I remember saving. I know exactly what the details were. I know names of people involved, and I go searching for that on Google. Google does not let me find that. It is so hard, if you don't know the exact website that you are going to find anything that is considered quote-unquote misinformation on the internet. And increasingly, a lot of it gets taken down anyway. But imagine now that when you go to the search system, that it's relevant to the, like I could find almost everything. If I could have a, you know, going back to the episode that I just did on applying AI, the latest episode of AI Unchained, I think it was like episode 22, if I'm not mistaken. But using that as an example is if you could do a vector search on your entire Nostr and social graph and all of the things that you linked and bookmarked and have your interaction with those things, weigh the search in a different way or weigh it heavier based on how you interacted with it, I would not lose anything anymore. I would be able to do those little, like, there was like a paper about a vaccine that had like a thing and it was about the chronic illness epidemic and this, that, or the other. And it would prioritize everything that had been shared to me, everything that I liked, the things that I bookmarked or saved, and that bookmark list wouldn't be just some thing trapped in Twitter that's impossible to organize. You can't export your bookmarks from Twitter. Are you kidding me? What the hell is the point that I have to scroll through my bookmarks forever? Even if you get a full, like, export of your Twitter thing, your bookmarks aren't in there. It is so maddening. It's like, what's the point of a bookmark if I can't later find it? I can't sort through it in an easy mechanism, using an easy, simple means. It's beyond frustrating. But going back to the idea, so that's just like, search was always my default way of thinking about it. But applying the same logic to reviews is such a, it's like lower hanging fruit. It's something that you could do, I think, to a bigger degree and faster. Because you're not trying to, you know, index the whole web, you can go ahead and just, you already value recommendations from your social graph very quickly, even if it's a small subset of recommendations or reviews or, I mean, movie reviews, anything. Like, the amount of things that you take from recommendations or suggestions or things that you trust. I mean, I can't tell you how many times there's been like a movie that like I've heard like four or five people say was crappy. And then somebody like a Bitcoiner or somebody that I am friends with and I know in person on Nostr or Twitter or something said, nah, actually it's pretty good. You got to think about it like this. Like it's, they're misinterpreting it. It's actually, it's really enjoyable. And I think they're just being poopy pants. And then I watch it and it's actually really good. I enjoy the film. I have had that happen multiple times. And it goes to show just how powerful relevance is. A great example, one of the lines that he says is that, you know, why does a soccer mom, a 43-year-old soccer mom, why is their review the thing that's supposed to be, you know, relevant to me? Maybe she's vegan and she doesn't like this restaurant because they serve steak. And that leads to another thing is we have these huge problems of political votes. You know, like a super left-leaning movie or video or something will come out and then it just gets bombarded with downvotes from Republicans, and then the same thing, exact same thing in the reverse. And so you get like 1 to 2 star ratings of something, a million downvotes, and the only quote unquote way to save it is to just disable all comments and disable downvoting. In fact, YouTube, the idiocy of YouTube was that they tried to remove the downvote thinking that that was going to solve the problem. And all it then does is obscure, it destroys the very value of being able to decide what is worth watching. And you would know that something was politically contentious because of that ratio. Now imagine that the only ones relevant to the people on the left are the lefty reviews, and the only ones relevant to the people on the right are the people on the right. Holy crap. That totally changes the entire dynamic of the web, that you go to content and nobody sees the same rating. Think about that. Nobody sees the same ratings. Nobody sees the same reviews. They see the ratings and the reviews that would be most likely to be accurate to what their experience and values may be. That is so cool to think about. And you know, you have to game reviews, because it's obvious. It's so obvious that an enormous amount of reviews are fake. And then you got things like Amazon. You know, Amazon, a great one was the Rings of Power, right? Is they just were just chopping off bad reviews left and right. It had, because they spent like $1 billion on this ridiculous series. They had to chop out the bad reviews, and they're suppressing it. But how could you? It's their platform. Of course they are going to do that. Of course they are going to do that, especially when those reviews determine whether or not someone is going to watch it. But because reviews are so bad, it's so hard to rely on them. And I make choices based on those things. It's more specifically when it's easy, when there's like 30,000 reviews for a product and they're five, and there isn't some heavy skew. There's not like a big batch of 1-star ratings. Like it's something that's gamed a lot in like apps. There's a bunch of like game apps and things, which is funny. The games game it. But there's a bunch of apps that I've used where, this is my attempt at actually making the reviews make some sort of sense, like getting the most value out of them. And my trick has always been to read the bad reviews. How many bad reviews do they have? And what exactly are they complaining about? Plenty of times you'll find that the bad reviews are all politically based. And it's like, okay, well then, now I know this isn't about the quality or something, like people are just butthurt about whatever it is that they perceive this thing to be, have a message of. And maybe I agree with it. Maybe it's just like, oh great, I don't want to be lectured to in this movie, or have a product that's, it's a woke product. I don't know, whatever the hell. But the bad reviews, the point is the bad reviews actually have more dense information, because there are less fake bad reviews. And if you look for specific information, like actual information in those bad reviews, you can parse out why it is. Like there was one where a product on Amazon was getting bad reviews, had a shocking number of bad reviews, mostly because it didn't have many reviews, and people are more likely to give bad reviews. People are more likely to go and review something if they're pissed off, right? I use products all the time that I'd be like, oh yeah, 5 stars, but I never go rate them because the thing just works. I get it and I don't have to think about it, and it's like, okay, well yeah, sure. Like I've never rated a set of paper towels. In fact, actually, I found some really nice paper towels recently. But in that, and the same thing is that, like, the 1-2-star reviews, like, if it's a 1-2-star rating, it's a whole lot more difficult. Like, that one catches me. If somebody has there's a 5-star rating, but there's a ton of 1-star reviews, and I can read the review and, you know, sort out the wheat from the chaff, so to speak, that's actually really useful. And I can tell, like the example was, I was reading the bad reviews and I could tell exactly what was happening. It was a product that you had to put together yourself. You had to build yourself, and they were making a really, really, the people literally just didn't know how to put it together. And probably it was something in the instructions. I can't remember exactly what it was, but I think people were like tightening something too much and it was breaking. I can't remember what it was, but I bought the thing and it worked perfectly fine. And I put it together great, but it actually had bad reviews. It had, in a large part, bad reviews, specifically because people didn't even know it was something they were going to have to put together. And when they did, they clearly couldn't do it. And it was a wonderful product. I honestly cannot even remember what it was. I just remember that this entire thing sticks out in my mind as, like, I remember that being a thing because it was really important in my, I need to read bad reviews. Like that was part of my, like, conviction of, like, okay, this is the secret sauce to sort out the review problem. But that's a half-assed That is not much of a solution. But the idea that my social graph would then weigh, like if you've got, especially like AI, again, being a great example, we are going to be in a world very quickly where the platforms are clearly censoring more. The platforms are clearly being more brazen about the fact that they are manipulating the conversation. They're manipulating the reviews. They're manipulating what you are able to see. And they are taking advantage. They are treating their users as if they own those accounts, because technically they do. And we are clearly in the then you find out stage. This is another one of those reasons why it's interesting how much of this applies to Bitcoin and the kind of model of why Bitcoin needs to evolve the way that it needs to evolve. Is that if we just keep increasing the cost and the fragility of the base layer, it will just keep working until it just doesn't work at all. And I want to read this quote because I thought this was so relevant to the assumptions being made by people about how we are going to interact with Bitcoin and how we should just, you know, infinitely raise the block size and all of this stuff, which, by the way, this is all relevant. It's fresh in my mind because I just got off a conversation with Patrick Smith from the Anarchast, which was great, by the way. We had a fantastic conversation, really good guy. But he's full on, you know, big blocker persuasion, I guess you could say. He agrees with Roger Ver and, you know, really liked the Hijacking Bitcoin book. And he brought me on, again, really nice guy, and was fantastic to kind of do the push, the back and forth on, to kind of flesh out those ideas. And he has no religious attachment to either or. He sees it purely from a, how easy is this application to use? And I think he sees it in the application layer perspective. But this is what I love about going back to this quote. That's just why this came to mind. So the quote says, AOL failed because it was a complex, managed, corporate information superhighway with all the bells and whistles. They learned the hard way that no amount of market data or corporate experience and foresight can predict what a new communication modality would become. Just as free markets always trump centrally governed ones, open networks are exactly where all the innovation goes. The internet assumed nothing, and it won because it had the basic, robust, open building blocks upon which all the innovation actually occurred. The same thing has happened with Bitcoin over the last 15 years and is now starting to happen with Nostr. I love this. I love this quote because so much about the disagreement on Bitcoin, disagreements in Nostr, still disagreements in Bitcoin, even though it didn't fork, you know, Bitcoin Cash is its own project now, is the point that we should be building the primitives and assuming nothing about how it is actually going to evolve and how it is actually going to be used and what features are actually needed. I think TCP, the version of TCP/IP that tried to put streaming into the base layer, into the actual TCP protocol, is a decent example. It's trying to over-engineer the base layer when all the base layer needed to do was establish connections and transmit packets. After that, no one could predict that mobile apps in 25 years were going to be the dominant, like, completely change the world interface by which we interacted with the internet. It was going to be literally just tons of different applications, not even websites. Actual software applications have essentially replaced the major function of websites now. And because of that, and because we don't have protocols for, like think about every single app. I'm just going to bring out my phone right now. Right now, how many apps do I have to have an account with? Probably every freaking one of them. Medium, I have an account. I follow people specifically on Medium. Matter, Everand, all my writing apps. God knows how many social apps I have, and the only ones that have a combined social graph are the fact that I have a bunch of Nostr apps. But every single other one, the Signal, Discord, Iris, or no, Iris is Noster, Instagram, Twitter, WhatsApp, Telegram, everything has a different group, a different account, a different social hierarchy or social graph. Even Bitcoin apps, like the Orange Pill app. I started up my thing on the Orange Pill app, and I'm starting from scratch. I'm having to go find the people that I follow on Twitter or Noster. And the only times that any of that is even bridged or any of that information can be carried on are when I'm signing in with some other giant corporate system that owns my account. And even more ridiculous is that I'm giving them my sensitive information. I give them a username and password that they have to keep safe, and I'm now vulnerable to. The only way that this, in fact, he says this, Svetsky says this in the actual article, is that the only possible way that this could be achieved without Noster, without an open protocol for social identity, is with a giant super mega surveillance corporation that you navigate to the internet, everything that you do on the internet through. And yet, because identity is a protocol, you can do this entirely from your side. You can do this privately. You can do this sovereignly. You can own your social graph. You can take it with you. I cannot tell you, like going through like what I talked about, if anybody saw the post I made on Noster recently, is I went to Facebook a couple of days ago, and I do kind of a yearly checkup on Facebook to see what kind of my old world is up to, and I log in, and almost every time logging in is an issue. But I just could not believe. I swear to God, it took me 20 minutes, maybe, just to get into Facebook. And so this is what I posted. I said, me, goes to Facebook, enters email and password. Facebook, confirm you are human. Me, identifies stoplights. Facebook, we send a code to your Gmail account. Me, goes to Gmail. I'm still using Gmail for Facebook because I don't want any of those huge platforms to know my main email. So I go to Gmail, enter email and password. Google, confirm you are human. Identifies bridges. We sent a code to your recovery email. Opens up a new Gmail tab. Enter email and password. Google, confirm you are human. Me, identifies more stoplights. Google, would you like to set up a recovery email? Me, no. Google, would you like to give us more personal information and your phone number? Me, no. Gmail, can we put cookies that track your entire web experience in your browser for your, quote, security and convenience? Me, no. Gmail, welcome to your email. Me, finds the security code to the other Gmail, enters security code for the other email login. Gmail, would you like to give us your personal information and your phone number? Me, no. Gmail, can we put cookies that track your entire web experience in the browser for your security and convenience? No. Welcome to your email. Me, finds security code for Facebook. Enter security code on Facebook. Facebook, would you like to give us more personal information and your phone number? Me, no. If you let us install this thing, you'll conveniently be logged in every single time you return to our website. Me, no. Facebook, welcome to Facebook. Also, there's a much better experience if you let us install this thing, and you'll conveniently be logged in every time that you return to our website. Have you changed your mind from 6 seconds ago? Me, no. I shit you not. This was my experience, and it took so long. Those steps of like going back and forth and like getting into the email, and then like I use, you know, custom passwords for all my stuff. So I have to like break out my local, like my non like LastPass password manager to get all those old passwords. So that was like a very painful experience, and it was so funny because just yesterday I go to try Mutiny, and Mutiny Wallet, which because of everything that's going on with Phoenix, which if anybody hasn't seen, we are so gonna do an episode about this, and I'm sorry it's not yet, because I guess this will go out on Monday, so it'll seem like I'm a few days behind, but it all basically just happened. Samurai happened yesterday, as of when I'm recording this. Samurai happened yesterday, and Phoenix happened this morning, actually. And it was first thing this morning That's right. It was this morning that I tried out Mutiny for the first time and then posted about it. I cannot believe I had been putting off doing Mutiny, and I can log in with Noster. So I had a one-click login because I'm just signing with my extension. It's all local. It's all on my side. And get this. Because I was logging in with Noster, I actually had a list of contacts at the top of people I could zap. And I literally just sent sats to it immediately. And boom, they showed up in my account. I connected to Fedimint. And this is so crazy. This is so crazy because this is exactly what he's talking about. And I already just saw a little microcosm of this. So when I logged in to Mutiny and I was choosing a Fedimint, I went to see who the eCash providers were. And I had no context for any of them. And then But when you see them, you immediately see the people that you follow on Noster, and you see which ones they reviewed and which ones they liked. And I didn't have to do anything. I didn't have to put in any information. It just pulled this from Noster. And I just went to the one that Odell uses, and I was like, okay, well, you know, if Odell made a bad choice, well, then we're in this shit together, so whatever. But that's crazy to think that, like, I had relevant reviews immediately. I knew someone that I trusted, and I knew who, even if he made a mistake or we disagreed on something, I know his values, I know the degree of scrutiny that he is going to put on it, and how much he cares about this shit, and cares about his reputation in standing up for what he believes, and I used that review, that one indication of a recommendation, to pick my Fedimint. I have already seen how unbelievably powerful and what a freaking cool-ass idea it is to have recommendations and reviews based on my social graph. And I'll tell you, that was I immediately went and posted about it on Noster without posting about anything specifically, but just how cool Mutiny was, because then I just then sent sats and just got the sats, and boom, now I had the wallet was working. You know, I did my 12 words and all that good stuff. You got to do your backup ritual. If you haven't done your backup ritual lately, or you set up a wallet and you didn't do your backup ritual, shame on you. Do it now. It's just a couple of words. Put them down. Write it. Put it away somewhere safe. Never, ever use a wallet or send money to a wallet at all that you do not have a proper backup. And every once in a while, check on those backups. Do it because Uncle Guy told you to. You can tell them that it's a homework assignment and you don't have a choice. Whoever them is, if somebody's like mad at you for checking, I don't know, that doesn't make any sense. Tell the procrastinator in your brain, the one who says, no, just like, let's just sit down on the couch and let's just watch a show, I'll do it tomorrow. Tell that guy to shut his trap and go do your backups. But the thing about Mutiny is that the experience was so great and so simple and easy, specifically because it leveraged so many of the other tools that have already simplified this process, and then combined it with Noster and my social graph, so that things that I would have had to figure out, like how would I have possibly had any means to pick which eCash Fedimint I was going to select? I didn't have to set that up, obviously. I just wanted to because I'm trying out a new app. But how long? What would I have had to do to try to go somewhere and figure out which one was one that had any semblance? And if I had read reviews, who wrote those reviews? Maybe the Fedimint themselves did, but I have a signed message and recommendation from Odell, and there were like four other five people right next to him that I could click to expand if I wanted to, but it was like all people I recognized. I can't remember who it was off the top of my head, but after I saw Odell and then nothing but people I recognized, I was like, oh, okay, yeah, I'll just try this one. Imagine having that experience with everything on the web. And simply because you have a protocol for a social graph that goes wherever you go. And going back to my experience of logging into Facebook and stuff is the incredible, like Mutiny doesn't have my email. I don't have an account. I didn't have to set up an account. They don't have my profile. Like my profile is public. Because it's social. Of course it is. Everybody can just look it up. It's just such a cool idea. And it's such a... I love the analogy of it's a new building material. And now, sure, we can build the same things with it. But it's foolish to not realize that you can build something that looks and behaves and is built an entirely different way because you have new building materials. And it's such a cool little microcosm of what the internet could look like in 5 years. It's really cool to see a light in the dark when things are so shitty and a bunch of bad things are happening. It's never a dull day in Bitcoin, man, I tell you what. But anyway, I'll have a link to the Anarchast with Patrick, actually, too. Maybe it'll be on Monday, so I think it'll be out by then. I'll have a link to this article, which is on highlighter.com. Also really cool is I got to look at the highlights of other people while I was reading the article. Again, just logged in by default because I had my extension, and I could highlight and zap immediately. God, I love this. It's so cool. And I got a shout out to Pablo, Pablo F7Z, I believe is his username. I'll have his link to him. If you're not following Pablo, he is building some amazing stuff. I have the link to Svetsky, the author and the guy who's building Satlantis with the team. And of course, Spirit of Satoshi, the 7 billion parameter open source model that is a based Bitcoiner. So if you want an AI model, I encourage you to download that one. That's super cool. Like the degree, just the amount of work and dedication that they put into building that is just so exciting. I'm already in love and very interested in this project. So follow Fetsky, follow Pablo, and check out highlighter.com as well, just because that's such a fantastic app and it has gotten so much cleaner and more seamless over the last 6 months or so. Really, really impressed. And lastly, don't forget to check out our amazing sponsors, Swan Bitcoin and CoinKite. Swan is where you're going to buy Bitcoin. CoinKite is where you're going to keep it safe, get a cold card. I am Guy Swan, and until next time, everybody, take it easy, guys. But I know somehow that only when it is dark enough can you see the stars. Martin Luther King Jr.